Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live. I'm John Davis. While nesting numbers of endangered green sea turtles in Florida can vary from year to year, the broader trend over the past few decades shows a marked increase in the animal's population. The Archie Carr National Wildlife Refuge stretches between Brevard and Indian River counties and is recognized among the world's most significant nesting sites for green sea turtles. In the 1980s, researchers documented dozens of nests. Today there are thousands, and that's despite increasing environmental threats that face the species, including disease, exposure to toxic algae blooms, plastic in the water, and coastal erosion. So what's behind this positive trend? That's just one of the questions researchers with the University of Central Florida's Marine Turtle Research Group are looking to shed light on through a new project intended to provide an update on green sea turtles' genetic data through the use of new genomic scale techniques. The research group has been monitoring sea turtle nesting sites and coastal in-water habitats in east central Florida for more than four decades. Groups like Turtle Time and the Sanibel Captiva Conservation Foundation here in Lee County have been similarly documenting sea turtle nesting activity here in southwest Florida. But when it comes to studying sea turtles at the genetic level, there's a significant gap in vital knowledge that could help to inform best practices when it comes to what steps we can take to promote best conservation practices for the species' long-term survival. Joining me now for a closer look at this newly launched research effort is Gustavo Stalin. He's a graduate student working with the Marine Turtle Research Group and a doctoral candidate with the University of Central Florida's Department of Biology. Welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Hi.
And we're also joined by UCF biologist, genetics researcher, and professor Dr. Eric Hoffman, who is teaming up with for this new genetics research project. Dr. Hoffman, thanks for taking the time to be with us.
I'm glad to be here.
And as always, we want to hear from our listeners. You can add your comments or questions to the conversation by calling 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we're at WGCU. Use the hashtag GCL. And Gustavo, before we dive into the minutiae of what this specific research project is all about, let's take a step back and talk about green sea turtles more generally. I know that here in southwest Florida, where I'm speaking to you from, loggerheads are the most prolific nesting sea turtle species. Is that the case throughout Florida, or more specifically in the Archie Carr National Wildlife Refuge, where your efforts are primarily focused?
Well, loggerheads in general, they're the most common species in Florida for nesting, at least for nesting numbers. And this has been the case since the 80s, and overall, it's still the case. However, green turtles, they show a pattern like really high years and very low years for nesting numbers. So, for example, 2 years ago in the Archie Carr National Wildlife Refuge, we had a record, at least in the portion that UCF monitors, the Brevard County portion of it. Of almost 16,000 nests. That was higher than the number of loggerheads that we had in the refuge, which is usually around 12,000-13,000. So, for example, last year we had our low year, so we had like 1,500 nests only. So this year we're expecting again to have, I don't know, like over 15,000 nests maybe. We're not sure because it's really hard to predict, but we'll probably be another year that we may have more greens than loggerheads. But overall, loggerheads are still more abundant in the state of Florida.
So barring that every other year ebb and flow in nesting numbers, it seems like the more longer-term trend, at least since the 80s, has seen quite a dramatic increase. To what have we generally attributed these gains?
So those gains should be attributed maybe to possibly, and we hope so, to our recovery of this, you know, the populations that we have in Florida, to like our subunits here in nesting the state. So hopefully it's, you know, it's a reflection of conservation efforts, not only, of course, by, you know, inside the refuge or inside other small protected areas along the coast, but like as a, like, some of efforts from, like, you know, state and local and federal agencies, and actually from many different countries, because we know that, for example, nesting females, they come here to nest. However, the juveniles, they'll leave our beaches here in Florida, and they'll go, you know, to the Caribbean and, like, into the ocean. They can easily cross from here to Europe or go all the way down to South Atlantic and so on. So those animals, they travel along, you know, the entire ocean, and they come back here, or, of course, they go back to their nesting sites, reproduce, in our case, is Florida. But it's probably like we can attribute the recovery numbers or this increasing numbers to a conjunction of efforts from many different agencies in many different countries.
Gotcha. Okay. And is there something about the Archie Carr National Wildlife Refuge in particular that we think makes it such, so central for green sea turtle nesting?
It's hard to say why the refuge, why that area is so important. I don't know if anyone will have that answer. It seems to be a spot that you really, really like it. And of course, there might be something, maybe in the ocean that kind of guides them to that area. Maybe the animals laying, maybe the sand or something in that particular region, maybe helps, the animals from that population to thrive more than others. Maybe that's, it's kind of hard to tease apart exactly what happened, but something apparently is happening. We were having some really, really high numbers there, which is amazing, is great, is absolutely stunning to see so many animals in such a small section of the beach.
Okay. And, the concept of monitoring potential sea turtle nesting sites and marking, documenting, and protecting nests, that's a pretty familiar one. But tell me more about what how and why the Marine Turtle Research Group monitors coastal in-water habitats as well, not just up on the sand.
Yeah, so the idea to monitor both of them, because if we sea turtles, they take about 20, 25, maybe 30 years to reproduce, from the time they were born to get to maturity. And if we're just monitoring, for example, the nesting beaches, something that is happening with juveniles, they're 4, 5, 10 years old in the water, maybe something is affecting maybe a disease, something is happening that is killing them, or, it's making it really hard for them to go back to the nesting sites. We'll only see that in 20-some or 30 years after when, those hatchings are not recruiting back to the nesting populations. So an important part of monitoring both, trying to get at least as many as possible life stages of them is just that way we can see in long-term trends if something is changing. We can try to anticipate some, the impact in the future in the nesting sites or something like that just by, monitoring them as juveniles in water and also them as adults on the beach. So that's why we have, nowadays, we have two in-water sites that we monitor inside the Indian River Lagoon, just south of Sebastian Inlet, and another one at Trident Basin by Cape Canaveral. And those two sites provide us a lot of information about, how well those juveniles are doing and, where they're going, and a couple other things that we can try to get from that.
And so let's talk about this newly launched research effort in collaboration with Dr. Hoffman, who is on the line with us as well. Dr. Hoffman, can you tell us a little bit about how this came about and how your expertise in genetics is intended to, provide, new information, data sets that we haven't been able to get before?
Yeah, so my research program focuses on looking at what genetic diversity within a species tells us about the evolutionary history of that species. And a large component of that is trying to understand connectivity among populations of a species. And so when you look at any variety of species, but let's stick with turtles, that there are going to be different populations of the turtles, different nesting beaches, maybe within the Gulf or in the Southwest Florida versus the Archie Carr Refuge. And there's a big interest in understanding how connected those populations are with each other. And the reason why that's important is because the more connectivity among populations, the more gene flow, the more genes are going to move back and forth between those populations. If populations are isolated, then if one population gets hit with a disease or gets hit, if there's something that's going to impact those populations, then the population numbers are reduced, then it's going to be harder for those numbers to rebound.
So in a nutshell, would it be accurate to say this new genetic data on green sea turtles should help us to understand to what degree the population increase we've been experiencing as a result of the local population recovering versus green sea turtles from other regions of the globe, for whatever reason, maybe choosing to relocate to the Archie Carr National Wildlife Refuge area, or just, I guess, which other green sea turtle populations from around the globe are mixing and mating with our green sea turtles?
Yeah, so that's exactly what we're looking at. And,
okay.
And so when we talk about having these juvenile foraging grounds off the coast, what's important to understand is that the juveniles that are in those foraging grounds, we know from other studies, are composed not just of the juveniles that like hatch off of our beaches, but they're a mixed population of turtles that can come from as far away as Brazil and the Mediterranean that come in the juveniles forage off of our shores. Now, we know that the majority of those turtles go back to their natal site when it comes time to nest. But what we're interested in is looking at for these foraging grounds, what percentage of those turtles come from the Florida beaches, come from Archie Carr or other places in Florida, versus come from far away, and then we can compare that with what we find on the nesting beaches to find out how many from the nesting beaches are local turtles versus turtles that what we would say is strayed and went to a different natal beach rather than their home natal beach.
Interesting. It reminds me of a research article from biologists with the U.S. Geological Survey I read a few years ago. This was about loggerheads in the Northern Gulf, so different species, different region. But their findings challenged some of these long-held notions regarding nesting behavior and nesting site fidelity. Rather than seeing loggerheads return to the same beaches they hatched from, over and over again, the researchers found some turtles would lay a clutch, say, in Gulf Shores, Alabama, and then they'd show up just days later, 250 miles away, to lay another clutch on a beach in Florida. Do you think we could potentially be seeing that same kind of thing with greens in terms of maybe challenging this concept of strict site fidelity?
I mean, these are exactly the type of data that we will be collecting. And so if we do see something like that, what we should be able to do, so with the new techniques, what's interesting with the new techniques that we're using, right? So as technology modernizes, we get better and better with the molecular techniques that we can use to answer these questions. And as the techniques get more specified, then we get better at pinpointing the local populations from where the turtles will come from. And so because we don't have turtles from every potential source, what we can do is we can use statistics from the foraging grounds to determine how many different clusters, how many different sources feed into that, and then we can determine on our nesting beaches, which proportions of those that are offshore come from the Florida nesting beaches, where we will have samples.
Gotcha. And I was reading a summary about this new project posted by UCF, indicating that this effort involves the use of new genomic scale techniques. I know you're a genetics expert, so this might not be the easiest thing in the world, but in the simplest terms possible, can you try and explain for us what these new techniques are and how they work?
Yeah, absolutely. So classically, the way that that genetics were introduced for studies like this would the ability to sequence a single gene or maybe just a few genes and look for genetic diversity among different populations. And this, for people that are in my age group, is very similar to what we all learned in like the O.J. Simpson trial with regard to DNA fingerprinting. And what we know is that different foraging beaches, because they're not fully connected, are literally going to get a different DNA fingerprint, you could say. And the new techniques, rather than looking at just one or a few genes, are literally what we're going to do is we're going to randomly take sections from across the entire genome of the turtle. And so this is going to give us something on the order of 10,000 to 20,000 genetic fragments that we're going to be able to analyze. And this is going to greatly improve the scale at which we can differentiate populations from each other to get a better look at how many populations are in these foraging beaches and where they might match back to in terms of the nesting beaches.
Dr. Hoffman, this sounds pretty groundbreaking. Just the impression I've always gotten speaking with biologists, specifically sea turtle biologists, is that there's so much about these animals' life cycles that we just don't know about. Is that the case? Is this really going to hopefully kind of reveal so much more about how these animals interact with each other?
I really think so, in that not only, I mean, with these genetic data, the genomic scale data, we'll be able to address many other questions that, in addition to what we've been talking about. And so we can get into questions of estimating the population size and looking in the evolutionary history of the species, and other questions that basically were unaddressable using the old techniques. And so we really do hope to be able to bring in some new insights with the genomic scale analysis.
And Gustavo, I would imagine that this project, you know, like all the work coming out of the Marine Turtle Research Group, aims to collect data with a minimum of disruption to the turtles themselves. How do you go about collecting the genetic material that you need to perform these tests, and where are you getting it from? Is this adult females that come ashore to nest, from turtles you come across in the water, from new hatchlings?
Yeah, so we do from both of them. So the juveniles, we have long-term data studies that we set nets, literally, like we would do to capture fish, but of course we do aiming for turtles. And we'll capture them, and those are little turtles, I don't know, like 50, 60, 80 pounds. And so we usually, from juveniles, we'll draw blood from a vein closer to the neck, and that's very easy to extract DNA from. If we're not able to get blood, we also collect a skin sample, a little piece of skin sample, and that is also enough for us to do our genetic analysis. From the nesting females, we do mostly from skin. We'll just collect a small section, you know, a small fragment of skin, right after they're done laying their eggs, and we'll do that. So it's what is really important to emphasize, if like people are going out on the beach and seeing, you know, like some researchers like us on the beach or in the Gulf Coast or some other groups as well, we only do our work and we only approach them to, you know, to start collecting data or, you know, measuring them and do everything that we do after they're done laying their eggs. So after, you know, when they're all the eggs are already on the sand, and it's safe for us, and, you know, there are several protocols we need to follow, that's when we'll collect that skin to make sure, you know, we're not interrupting their process or, you know, or maybe damaging or, you know, like frightening them away just, you know, to collect our data.
Gotcha. And Dr. Hoffman, please forgive this gross oversimplification, but aside from serving as a sort of 23andMe for green sea turtles, will the data we're collecting perhaps also provide some insight into how the species may be coping with challenges like exposure to toxic algae blooms or plastic pollution in the water?
Yeah, well, what we're going to get a better grasp on is the level of genetic diversity that's present within each of these populations. What we know is that genetic diversity is important in order for the species to be able to survive and adapt to a changing environment. And because these populations had declined so greatly in the recent past, there's questions about how much diversity is left within these populations. And, the more mixing we get among different regions, the more likely we'll see an increase in our local populations. But yes, and so in addition to understanding where they come from, we'll be able to also look within these populations to assess levels of genetic diversity.
Got you.
If I can just jump in on that real quick.
Of course, Gustavo.
Yeah, so like just going from the harmful algal blooms and other threats, some of the animals that we're using for this research are also being used to, you know, samples from these same animals are also being used for, you know, harmful algal bloom analysis, and for febrile papilloma, little tumors that grow in those animals. So we're not exactly using only exactly the same animals, but some of it, it's been shared, so we can try to, you know a little bit more and try to understand a little bit more, you know, the impact of harmful algal blooms and from febrile papilloma and all of that in those animals. So
And Gustavo, I know your dissertation research has had you, figuratively and maybe literally, up to your neck in juvenile Southwest Atlantic hawkbill sea turtles. How is your doctoral research connected to this new genetics-based research effort?
So this is my main, the main part of my research. My research will be probably, mostly answering a couple other questions related to this. So pretty much all of my research will come from these genetic analysis. I'm going to be able to analyze them in, a couple different ways. And most of my research will be this, trying to understand how the impact of this, drastic increase in number of nesting females in Melbourne Beach and in Florida as a whole is changing or is not changing, the proportion of juveniles in our waters, in our case, the two sites, but this would probably reflect, in all other foraging sites for juveniles along the coast and the Florida coast. But also I'm really interested in knowing how many sites how many clusters, as Dr. Hoffman was saying, of, how many different populations we have in those foraging sites. Because everything that we know, or most of what we know nowadays, comes from this, these previous genetic analysis that we were probably losing a lot of resolution or being able to tease apart some of those populations. And maybe we were underestimating the number of sites where these, or the number of populations where these animals are coming from. So what we're trying to do is to use not exactly better, but more advanced genetic data to be able to, to tease that apart and to have a better understanding of their genetics, where they're coming from, how many populations are contributing. And that will reflect in future, better plans for conservation and better planning and better management practice, let's say.
Certainly. Well, that is unfortunately all the time we have for today's show, but I look forward to connecting with you in the future when we have more data and maybe some conclusions to draw. That'll be fun to follow up with. Thanks so much to my guests. We've been speaking with University of Central Florida doctoral candidate and researcher with the university's Marine Turtle Research Group, Gustavo Stalin. Great to speak with you, and I'm sure I'll be calling you doctor the next time we talk. Thanks for coming on the show.
I hope so. Thank you very much.
Also, thanks to Dr. Eric Hoffman, UCF biologist, genetics researcher, and professor who is teaming up for this new project. Dr. Hoffman, thanks for taking the time and sharing your insights.
Thank you.
And thanks to our earlier guests during this segment about the upcoming C43 Reservoir Water Quality Summit, Jennifer Hecker from the Coastal and Heartland National Estuary Partnership, Phil Flood from the Southwest Florida, or South Florida Water Management District, rather, and Dr. Bob Knight from Wetland Solutions in Gainesville. If you missed any part of today's show, you can always hear episodes in their entirety on our website, gulfcoastlive.org, or subscribe to our podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Our show today was produced by Mike Canary, myself, and Rachel Iacovone. Our director is Richard Cinqui. Our social media coordinator is Tara Callaghan. Gulf Coast Live is made possible through the generous support of the Elizabeth B. McGraw Foundation. For now, thanks for listening. I'm John Davis. This is WGCU-FM, Fort Myers, 90.1, WMKO Marco Island, 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.